And all the people of God said amen.
Amen.
How blessed of God we are to be in this place. To know today that we are not here by accident, nor are we here today by some coincidence. But God, through his divine providence, has again permitted our destinies to intertwine. How we thank God for the marvelous gift of his son, Jesus the Christ. Oh, I stand in this seminary to declare that he is both Savior and Lord. To our president and dean, said to Dr. Garland, we've got to do a little better at the seminary. Apparently, we weren't taking good enough care of him, so he had to moonlight as the president of a university, but we're going to be praying for him. He has honored me with the investments he has made in my life. To Dr. Gregory, who was so gracious in his introduction, thank you for being a mentor and a friend. To Dr. Glower, who says more on accident than most of us say on purpose, thank you for what you have done. To my professors who are here, to colleagues and friends who've come, to the good people of the Antioch Church, there are experiences in life, the older I get, the more I'm aware of them, that leave us so awashed in gratitude that the weight of them makes the head strain to articulate it, but only the heart can appreciate it. And as we strain for words, the best we can come up with is a thank you. Thank you to this preaching department for this investment. Thank you to my friends for your support over the years. Dr. Garland introduced you to my father. My mother is also here. I didn't get the chance to introduce her to him. My mother is here. Mama, would you just wave your hand? My family is here. I have a sister, a brother-in-law, a daughter, and a wife. And my wife, I tell people all the time, is God's the greatest gift of grace, with the exception of salvation, that God has ever given to me. My cousin is here. I see her. I'm grateful for their presence. I've had friends who've come from Crockett, from Fort Worth, from Dallas, Bryan, Temple, Houston. It is an honor, and I want you to know how much I appreciate it. I appreciate the privilege of serving the Antioch Church. This journey at Truett began for me some years ago. But I had been invited to lecture at Truett in this very chapel twice on the fundamentals of preaching. I had received an honorary doctorate degree, and Paul Powell made it his mission to give me a degree without honor. And this last semester has stripped me of most of that honor. And then you come mess it up by giving me this award, so I'm honored to receive it. A few scattered remarks, and I will bid you good day. Abraham Heschel has a way of saying so much. He gives us almost an avalanche of inspiration in an atom of information. Once while sitting in Dr. Glower's class, he quoted Abraham Heschel saying that to pray is to dream in league with God. Those words arrested me. They provoked me. As I've attempted to matriculate here, Truett, those words have been both my tormentor and my temptress. It has haunted me as I've hunted it. It has become both elusive and a pursuer. So today, you get to join with me as I run from it until I catch it. To dream in league with God. What kind of dreams does the omniscient, omnipresent, ubiquitous God has? What does God dream about? I did not know, but I knew that whatever my dreams are, they were too small. And the reality is that for many of us, that we don't bother to dream. We have become almost infatuated with the average, and we are content to be the living personifications of what Langston Hughes wrote about when he writes, "What happens to a dream deferred? Does it dry up like a raisin in the sun? Or fester like a sore and then run? Does it stink like rotten meat, or does it sugar and crust over with a syrupy sweet? Does it sag like a heavy load, or just explode? What happens to a dream deferred?" And if you don't get Langston Hughes, maybe you're like me and had to confess that there are times in my life when I'm content to be in a rut, only to discover that the only difference between a rut and a grave is the length, and if you stay in a rut long enough, it becomes your grave. And I was moved by those marvelous words of Mufasa as he spoke to Simba. When Simba looked, Mufasa said to him, "Look within yourself, for Simba, you are more than you have become." The word of challenge I've come to offer to us today as students, as professors, as people who live within the kingdom of God is that we are more than we have become. And I've come to ask you to initiate or at least to elevate your dreaming. Because to dream in league with God is to have God to invite us to see our possibilities from his perspective. Now, if I were at home, and since I've got some folk who make noise like they do at home, I think I'll act like I'm at home just a bit. I'm wondering, is there anybody here who's interested in dreaming in league with God? I'm glad that you are. First thing I want to suggest to you is that if you're going to dream in league with God, you've got to seek your dreams from the divine. In our text today, we are introduced to an ancient report from a youthful reporter, Joseph, the favorite son of Israel. As we look at the life of Joseph, he gives us some helpful and holy hints on how to dream in God's league. He is known as Joseph the Dreamer, and Joseph has a dream, and he shares it with his brothers. In Joseph's dream, we're able to get some great principles. Listen to what Joseph says as he reminds us that we are to seek our dreams from the divine. Joseph says that if we're going to dream in league with God, we've got to seek our dreams from the divine so that our dreams will be the right size. Can I confess to you that I operate in the realm of reality? That my vision has been tinted and maybe even tainted by the prism of the practical. I run around in the arena of the actual and the average. And so I have a tendency to have small dreams. But here Joseph in the text, in a society that celebrates seniority, Joseph here has the audacity to say that God is going to elevate him above his brothers. He has this dream where his brothers and even his parents, even the cosmos appears to bow down to him in obeisance. Joseph says that God is going to let him be a leader in a society where Joseph wouldn't have been second or third or fourth. I'm sure they'd have to start coming up with a new dynasty by the time they got to him. He was number 12. But he says God operates in the arena of the amazing, that with God the miraculous occurs all the time. One writer has eloquently put it that God can hold an ocean in the hollow of his hand and at the same time display omnipotence in a dewdrop, that God can ride the chariots of a midnight hurricane and at the same time cross over the suspension bridge of a spider's web. God routinely does the amazing. I mean, each evening he takes light and matter, flings it against a canvas of darkness, hangs it across the horizon, and it becomes the midnight sky. He operates in the amazing, and Joseph says that God's going to let him jump in line. Dr. Gregory told you I grew up in Hearn, Texas, and when we would go to eat, you'd want to eat in the cafeteria on Tuesday because they served Italian spaghetti. When they served Italian spaghetti, they would always have those cinnamon rolls. And invariably, they would run out of cinnamon rolls, but we would line up in alphabetical order. One of the fortunes of having parents with last names Atchison means that I get to get in line. And so I would always get to get a cinnamon roll, but my best friend and first cousin, whose name is Gillespie Weber, he didn't get to get in line. Gillespie would have to wait, and I don't know, I think it was some cafeteria conspiracy, because they would always run out of cinnamon rolls. And they'd give you those sugar cookies that they had the day before. But whenever we would catch our principal looking away, I would let Gillespie cut in line, and he was able to get something that he really wouldn't have been able to get by himself. Joseph says that our dreams from God have to be the right size, because there are times when God will let us cut in line. Somebody listening to me, you're here in school, but somebody had better SAT scores than you. Somebody did better on the grades, but God let you cut in line. Somebody has a position in a job where someone else had more seniority than you, but God let you cut in line. There are those with gifts who are far better than mine. There are those who are far more able, far better educated, but I'm here today because God let me cut in line. We've got to ask God so that our dreams will be the right size. But we've got to seek our dreams from the divine so that not only will they be the right size, but that our dreams will be the right substance. I must confess, y'all, I'm an American. It is the American dream to have 2.5 children. A three-bedroom house, two baths, the two cars. And if I'm not careful, I'll get so caught up in American dreaming. Because I was an American before I was a Christian. I'll get so caught up in American dreaming that I will reduce the God of the cosmos to a God of mere commerce. That I will run into the tendency of reducing the Lord who resides in the mountains to being merely the God who provides money. But if you read, Joseph never says God's going to give him anything. He says God's going to make him something. I was blessed to have a grandmother who showed me that you can have affluence and not have influence. But she had influence without even having affluence. She lived in what most people would consider a shanty. She lived below the poverty level, but she carried within her a God-given respect that when she walked down the street, grown men would put out cigarettes as not to offend her. You see, the tragedy with many of us is that we ask God to have something without asking God to be something. And the only problem with having something is that what you have, you can lose, but what you are, you keep it. If I've got a car, I can lose it. But even if I don't have a nice car, I can still ask God to order my steps. I can have a nice bed, but only God can give me rest. I can have a beautiful house, but only God can make it a home when he makes me to become something. And so, we must seek our dreams from the divine. But then you've got to share your dreams with discretion. I guess if there is a complaint we have from Joseph, it is that Joseph didn't understand that to be a dreamer is to be different. T.E. Lawrence said, all men dream, but they do not dream equally. He goes on to say that there are those who only dream at night, and they awake to find their dreams lost in the vanity and the recesses of the darkness. But there are those who will dream in the day, and they are far more dangerous, for they will seek to make those dreams a reality. See, to be a dreamer is to be different, because there are others who dream, but they don't have dreams like you. And Joseph discovers when he shares his dream is that the problem with Joseph sharing his dreams is that he didn't use discretion. Everyone can't handle your dream. And the mistake that Joseph makes is he shared his dreams with people who did not dream. He shared his dream with people for whom life was a nightmare, and it is a dangerous thing to share dreams with non-dreamers. See, to be a dreamer is to be different, but to be a dreamer is also to be despised. One of the things that this country is going to have to reckon with in our past that we so often try to smooth over is that we've not been kind to dreamers. Martin King told us of his dream. We killed him. Robert Kennedy said that there are those who see things as they are and ask why. I see things that never were and ask why not, and we killed him. And Joseph discovers from his brothers when he shared his dream with them that people who do not dream will always attempt to kill dreamers. You've got to be careful with whom you share your dreams. You've got to share them with discretion. Everybody is not able to handle it. And when Joseph's brothers heard, they share with us something that I've discovered in ministry. Now, I must confess that one of the most humbling things that Truett has been that I am older than many of the teachers. And so out of those years of wisdom, can I share with those of you who are going into ministry something? That if you dream, you will be despised? No, let me just say it like I would at home. That to be in ministry means that certain people won't like you. No, you didn't get it. They won't like, it doesn't matter. It doesn't matter how hard you go, and to try to get them to like you would be an exercise in futility and frustration. They do not like you. The reality is some of them don't like themselves. And if they don't like who they are, they're not going to go out of their way to like who you are. Joseph discovers by sharing that there are those who do not like him, that dreamers are both different and despised. I was preaching for Pastor Dwight McKissick in Arlington. He had placed us at the Park Suite Inn, Park Suite Inns. Ms. Ashton and I checked in, and when we checked in, we got ready to go, and we were attempting to go up to the fourth floor. We were on the fourth floor. I had to go change because I had to do some training that night with some youth workers. We checked in, and as we were going, I saw a group of kids there in the lobby. We pushed forward, nothing happened. So we stood there, and as we stood there, I pushed forward, nothing happened. I discovered that this elevator is an elevator that will not work if someone outside is pushing the button. It wouldn't move. Now, this group of kids were there for another Baptist conference, and they were on their way to the pool. I was trying to get to the fourth floor because what I needed to do was on another level, and I was trying to get to the fourth floor, but because they were pushing my button, I couldn't move. If you're going to dream, you got to be careful who you let. You've got to be careful who you let push your buttons. I'm sorry, I thought it was Sunday morning. I'm taking my time. Let me hasten. You must seek your dreams from the divine. You must share your dreams with discretion. But you must secure your dreams with determination. One would think that after Joseph got the vision, that it would be a short path from the dream to the realization. But I want to suggest to you that, first of all, the pathway to the dream is strange. God gives Joseph this vision. He doesn't go from this dream to the palace, but instead he goes into a pit. On the journey, he literally makes a pit stop. Goes from the pit to Potiphar's house. And at Potiphar, hear me, those of you who are young seminarians who will go in ministry, at Potiphar's house, he discovers an interesting principle. He goes there, and Miss Potiphar sees Joseph, and she decides that, I like that. And Joseph says to Miss Potiphar, no, because Joseph never wants his gifts to carry him where his character cannot keep him. Goes from Miss Potiphar being there, being lied on. From there, he goes to prison. From prison, he goes to the palace. And you think that the journey from your dream to the reality ought to be easy, that God has shown you, that God has already allowed you to see what he wants you to become. And it just seems to make good sense that if God has shown it to me, I ought to be able to go and get it. But I've discovered that God never makes two mountains without putting valleys in between them, that on the journey, it is often strange, it is often difficult, it is often hard. But the reason God showed you the vision in the beginning is so that it could sustain you during the periods of drought, that when it looks like ministry is not what it ought to be, you ought to remember what God told you you would become. Those times when you're doing those papers and you've done everything you could to get to page 3 and you need 15 pages, when you're wondering about the very salvation of your professor, Lord, does he even know you? God said, I gave you the vision. And you've got to remember what the dream looks like, because somewhere between the dream and reality, the saddle falls. pathway to the dream is strange, but the presence of the divine will sustain. That passage that they read from Acts, and there is a refrain found over and over again in the life of Joseph. You keep hearing the words, and the Lord was with him. I wish I could give you the secret to avoid trouble. Wish I could tell you how to not hurt, how not to cry, how not to feel pain. Those things I do not know. But there is something I'm most assured of. And that is that in the lowest valleys of life, he is there. That on mountaintops, he is there. That at the difficult places, the rough edges, the times when you doubt, when you wrestle with your own insecurity, when your own unworthiness, the Lord is with us. His very name, Emmanuel, means he is with us. And because he is with us, he will keep us, because the presence of God is always active. When God is with you, you can walk to the flood and the waves won't overtake you. You can go through the flames, the fire, and the flames won't be kindled against you. I am with you. I will never leave you nor forsake you. I am with you always. And his very presence means that everything is going to be all right. I challenge you to dream. I close by sharing with you a story. It may be threadbare. It may be old. But I think it gives the point. There were these three trees. They stood in the forest and they began to dream. And they shared their dreams one with the other. The first tree said, when I grow up, I want to be a treasure chest, and I want to hold the great treasures of the world. The second tree said, when I grow up, I want to be a mighty sea-sailing vessel and carry important cargo. The third tree said, I just want to keep growing and lifting my arms up to the heavens to show people who God is. These trees began to grow, and one day they felt the axe of the lumberjack. And as the woodsman cut them down, the first tree found himself being fashioned. He was not fashioned into a treasure chest. Instead, he was made into a trough. Felt the coarse feeling of hay, and he was made there to feed the animals. That second tree made his way to the shipyard, but only to discover that he did not have enough wood to be a mighty sea-sailing vessel. Instead, he was made a boat to go fishing in. That third tree was cut down, stripped of his bark, and thrown atop a pile, left to dry. Years went by, and these trees had forgotten their dreams until one night. The first tree that dreamed of being a treasure chest overheard the husband say, I wish I could get you a room, but there was none at the inn. And he felt the hay, and he heard the father say, this will do. And instead of being made a treasure chest, he was made into something that would hold the baby, a manger. And it dawned on him that he held the greatest treasure that the world had ever known. That second tree that was made into a sea-sailing vessel that was out there with the fishermen, one day in the middle of a storm, heard those say, we're going to perish. And he felt one of his sleepy passengers stand and go to the deck of the ship. And he saw him wave his hands and say, peace be still. And it dawned on him that he held the master of the ocean, the sea, and the sky. But that third tree once heard an old crossmaker said, any tree will do. Give me that one. He was placed upon the back of a Galilean carpenter with a messianic complex, marched up a hill called Golgotha. He felt the pain of the nails. He felt the spikes in his feet. And it was there that he became an old rugged cross. And it was at that cross that I first saw the light. Hold on to your dreams. I'm closing because I'm feeling like I'm at home, but I close by sharing with you, I've got another dream. Yes, true, it is a dream, but I dreamed of a city called glory. It was bright and so fair. When I entered that city, my loved ones met me there. They led me from mansion to mansion, and all the sights I saw. But I said, I want to see Jesus.